Reading from Proverbs chapter 22. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's August 14th, 2012, and I'm excited to not only have Pastor Jason Schiffo in the studio with me, but also to have an author that many of you are familiar with. He's written, I think, 18 different books. The current one out is called Man Alive, Transforming Your Seven Primal Needs into a Powerful Spiritual Life. And we're going to talk about that powerful spiritual life, especially encouraging our men that are tuned in, because there's lots of opportunity for you to be engaged, to be growing, to be used of God, to further His kingdom cause. And Dr. Patrick Morley has done that for a number of years. He's the best-selling author of Man in the Mirror. So many of the churches throughout our area, I know, promoted that book, and many of you guys have read that. Well, his new book, Man Alive, is a real powerful demonstration on the various ways that God wants to ignite us to continue to serve Him, because many men are leaving the church. Many men are not excited to be involved in Bible studies. Many men don't want to be transparent and challenged, and Dr. Morley is going to help us through a variety of topics today. We have all sorts of questions for him. So thank you for carving out time, being available, and being willing with your busy schedule, the demands on your life, all that you're doing. You're teaching a weekly Bible study to 5,000 men. You're involved in your church. You're a father, a grandfather, a husband, and a very successful businessman. I was reading in the back of your book, I couldn't believe it, like 59 companies where you were either a managing partner or partnerships. How do you fit all that into a short life?
Well, when I figure it out, I'll let you know. The truth is, I lead a very balanced life. For some reason, I got the idea that I wanted to be at every single children's event growing when they were growing up. And so I just basically said, I'm going to work till 6, I'm never going to work after 6, and I'm not going to work on weekends, and I'm not going to take work home, and I never did. So I think, you know, and God just sort of honored all that and really allowed me to, you know, have a wonderful relationship with my kids growing up. And now they both have established Christian homes, and their kids can't remember, you know, ever being without the Lord. So it's wonderful.
Well, who was instrumental? Was there a man in your life early on? Because that's kind of incredible, because many people that have achieved, whether it's in the athletic world or the business world, or have found themselves with a variety of different degrees, it usually is at the cost of their relationship with the Lord, generally because they're so focused or intentional on this area of their life, God kind of gets shoved in the background. Have you always kept that balance from, like, coming to Christ at an early age? And tell us a little about that spiritual journey that you had years ago.
Well, I guess probably the big turning point is the difference between my dad's life and my life. So I'm very passionate about men's discipleship. I'm very passionate about helping men become godly men, godly husbands, and gody fathers. And, in fact, that's I wake up, I live, eat, and breathe men's discipleship. And the reason that I'm so passionate about this is because when my dad, this sounds like it's going to be a terribly long story, listeners, it's not. But in 1926, when my dad was two, the youngest of four children, his father abandoned the family. So my dad grew up in a home with a single mom. And she did a great job, but they were dirt poor. When my dad became a man, he had to decide whether he would repeat the cycle or he would try to be a cycle breaker. I don't think he ever used those words. And, of course, I'm grateful that he wanted to break the cycle, but he had never felt the scratch of his father's whiskers. He had never heard his father read a bedtime story. He had never tussled with his dad on the ground. He'd never thrown a ball in the back. You know, it never heard the sound of a truck door slamming at the end of the day, signaling that dad was about to reenter the orbit. Never smelled his father's work clothes, nothing like that. And so my dad basically had to guess at how to be a father to me, and he did the best he could, but he and mom realized they needed some help, so we became part of a church, and he was really there to get some moral and religious instruction for his four boys, of which I'm the oldest of these four. And when they found out that he would work, the church had a vision to do the work, And so he responded to that. He became the top layman in the church by the time he was 40. But our church, for whatever reason, did not also have a vision to disciple my dad, to train my dad, to equip my dad to be a godly man, a godly husband, and a godly father, the reason, of course, that he came. And so he, you know, there were no men in the church who saw my dad, this young rookie father and husband, coming into church, and knowing what needed to be done, took action. And so as a result, my dad just basically had to guess at how to do all this because it was unexampled to him. So at the age of 40, he got burned out, and we all left the church. And after that, the wheels came off the wagon. I was in the 10th grade at the time, my youngest brother in the 3rd grade. And, wow, this is turning into a long answer. Sorry, guys. I'll wrap it up. I was kind of getting caught up in this story myself here a little bit. But I quit high school. My next brother followed in my footsteps. He died of a heroin overdose. My next brother never held a job for more than 6 months until he was 50. And my youngest brother is a recovering alcoholic and is divorced and a hermit, a real hermit. And my dad just never saw it coming. And so the reason that I'm so passionate about men's discipleship is because when, as a young man, I decided that I needed to try church again, get back to church, there were some men who saw this young rookie husband and businessman and took me under their wing and trained me on how to be a godly man, husband, and father. One man in particular, he saw things in me I didn't see in myself. He spoke words into me of hope, and he basically painted a vision for the kind of man that I could become in Christ if I would depend on Jesus. So it really helped me to set up these priorities, which led to this balanced life that I'm talking about. It's really the gospel of Jesus that has enabled me to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, how old are you at this time where you're kind of reconnecting with the church? I guess you're saying at this point, had you had that conversion story where you knew Jesus Christ was a Savior, that he was Lord of your life, you just didn't know how to live that out?
No, I really didn't. So I grew up in a Christian home that didn't know Christ, if that makes sense. And so I, when I quit high school, joined the Army. And I was looking for a life philosophy that would make sense. I was hungry. I wanted my life to count, to make a difference. I wanted there to be a purpose to my life. I wanted to do something with my life. And so I was looking for a life philosophy, and I ended up with Hamlet's Shakespearean quote, "This above all to thine own self be true, and it must follow the night as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man." And I thought that if I could just try to do the right thing by every person I met every day, that would be the secret to meaning and purpose. And so I became a moralist. But Jason, Mark, you know, anytime you join a new group, you meet the other members of the group, like the Chamber of Commerce or the Rotary Club, you know. And so I met the other moralists in the world, and I quickly realized they all have one thing in common. None of them have any money. And so I said, well, maybe I should become a materialist, too. And so I chose a career in business and decided to try to make a lot of money. And so my first life philosophy really became, money will solve my problems, and success will make me happy.
Mm. This is Pastor Jason. Pat, you kind of touched on something that I would really love for you to maybe unpack for the listeners a little more. You know, myself, I come from a home where, you know, my father left at an early age and didn't really have a perception of what father was. And I would say that probably spent a season of my life trying to define God through some pretty bad glasses, you know, through glasses of my own father. You know, will God be here? Will God leave? Will God actually support me in everything? Or will one day I wake up and God will be absent and I'll have to just go on my own way? And I think for people that they view God the Father, especially men, they view God the Father through their father. And I'd love for you to talk about that, because I know you touch on that in the book.
I do. As you're speaking, Jason, a friend of mine comes to mind who told me one day, he was the dean of Man in the Mirror's faculty for a number of years, a guy named Rod Cooper, and he said when he was in college, he got a phone call that he needed to come home, that his father had committed suicide. And so when he arrived and was going through his father's things, he found a note, and in which his father apologized, but also told Rod that he should trust God because God will take care of you. And Rod said to me, he said, well, why should I trust God to take care of me? He couldn't take care of my dad. And so his credo became trust God and have a great backup plan. And so I think this is what a lot of men do, is they just have some distorted view of God the Father because of their earthly father. And, hey, wow, isn't this an incredibly accelerated problem, heightened problem in our generation right now? I think it's as bad as any time I can find in recorded history, where fathers have basically turned away from their children. And as a result of this, we have a whole generation of younger people. And I'm not talking about, I think fathers in general are more hands-on today and are more involved, but there's something missing. There's this lack of sense of responsibility and privilege of this intergenerational transfer of spiritual wealth from one generation to the next. The thing that's talked about in things like Psalm 78 and right after the Shema and Deuteronomy 6, really passing these lessons on to the children. And hey, one thing that's really been common in my generation is parents thinking, well, I just need to let my children, choose their own way and decide for themselves, and instead of giving them guidance, they're giving them carte blanche to do what the folly being bound up in the heart of the child, what that folly would lead to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. In fact, I know later in the book, and I really, because I'm passionate about disciple making, I'd love to talk more about that and unpack that later. But
yeah.
I think it's so right, because the Bible makes clear instruction to fathers and parents that you are to teach your children these things and that they are to follow. It doesn't ever say, like, if they follow, if you teach, sometimes try to. There's not the word try or if or in that. The Bible is very clear that we are to do it. And I think that parents miss that. They miss passing that down. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9 is just foundational. It's above our door frame at the house. And we just look at that. I mean, as we go along and press it upon their children, and my wife and I's understanding that means that we have this constant kind of pressure on our kids, constant. Our hand doesn't leave the heads of our kids. And also, at the same token, I was teaching out of Matthew chapter 6, the Lord's Prayer, and it struck me during the time that I teach from the pulpit that it says, "Our Father who art in heaven." And I was thinking that that's such a powerful thing for us to hear, because some of us would go, "Our Father who is in the other room. Our Father who isn't here today, our Father who let us down." And the Bible's very clear that it's not our Father here, it's our Father who is in heaven. And I think that men really need to grab a hold of that and understand that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. This story of the prodigal son is, everybody knows the text, of course. But it's just such a beautiful vision of unconditional love. And in fact, it is a perfect illustration of unconditional love, because when the boy had wasted all of his father's money and was actually coming home, he was coming home with a humble heart. He had rehearsed the speech that he's going to give his father. "Father, I've sinned against you, and please accept me back and let me be as a hired servant," and all that. But the Bible says that when the father saw his son a long way off, he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him on the neck and showed him compassion. And it's interesting, because the son hadn't said anything yet.
Yeah.
So now, if the son had been all huffy and, like a prideful know-it-all kid, then the father would have had to take a different course of action. But it didn't affect how much the father loved the son. And so one of the primal needs, in fact, if I could just kind of run through this a little bit. So I have met with thousands of men in one-on-one conversations in the last four decades. And when men try to put into words what they feel like is holding them back, what they feel like is keeping them from feeling fully alive, and this really goes to this book, Man Alive, they inevitably mention one or more of seven symptoms. They'll say things like, "I just feel like I'm in this all alone. I don't feel like God cares about me personally, not really. I don't feel like my life has a purpose. It feels random. I have these destructive behaviors that keep dragging me down. My soul feels dry. My most important relationships, they're not healthy. And finally, I don't really feel like I'm doing anything that will make a difference and leave the world a better place. And so it's interesting because these inner aches and pains also correspond, surprise, to God-given primal needs that men have that can only be met God's way, and God has ordered it to be that way. And so one of the biggest needs of all is this need to feel like God really cares about me personally. And it's this primal need that we're talking about to feel the Father's love.
Yeah, I in the book there, you talk about men being lukewarm, and I think that speaks to those needs. But it's interesting, when I read that in the book last night, I went to Revelation chapter 3, you know, because John is talking about the church in Laodicea, and I started to read that, and just, you know, totally out of context. But a lot of what's happening in Revelation chapter 3 and what Jesus is saying to that church is, a lot of, I think, what, when I get together with men, I feel like they're feeling, like Jesus is knocking on the door, but, you know, they don't know how to answer the door.
That's interesting. So there's a researcher who estimates, he's a sociologist, but based on his experience, he estimates that 80% of men are so emotionally impaired that not only can they not express their feelings, they can't even identify them, their emotions. So I do think there's a lot of emotional bondage for guys, and they just can't figure out exactly, you know, they act out. They act out. And there's a real strong tendency, you know, when women have problems, they tend to do what? They tend to move toward relationships and talk things out. Men, and these are generalizations, but generally true, when men, they have a problem, we tend to move toward isolation. We tend to withdraw from other people. And so anybody who's ever watched the National Geographic Channel knows that the lion never attacks the herd. The lion always goes after what? The stray, the one who's been isolated. And so every predator knows the strategic value of isolation. And great news radio listeners, let me tell you, we have a predator on our trail too. 1 Peter 5:8 says, stay alert, your enemy, meaning the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And so it's so interesting to me because, as I say, men move towards isolation, and not only isolation from God, but isolation from people as well. And so the two great commandments are love God and love people. Isn't it ironic that the two top things that will give a man a sense of meaning and purpose and joy and peace and the fruit of the Spirit are the very two things that he abandons when he gets into trouble?
In case you just tuned in, we have Dr. Patrick Morley on the line with us. He's a best-selling author. Many of you are familiar with his name because of the book Man in the Mirror and the ministry work that he's been doing for a number of years. But he's come out with a recent new book called Man Alive, Transforming Your Seven Primal Needs into a Powerful Spiritual Life. And Patrick, we're going to ask you to hang around. I want to pull a Dobson. That's one of my favorite things when we have a special guest that I believe can speak truth into our lives, speak wisdom and guidance, and give us a biblical overview on the foundational principles that God desires to have ignited in all of our lives. Though this book is mainly directed towards men, women can learn a lot about the men in their lives and how to be effective and helpful. And so we're going to ask you to stay around, and we're going to continue our conversation and talk about this tomorrow. But how can people get a hold of you or your ministry to purchase copies of this book, Man Alive, or maybe the curriculum to start a men's group in their church? Or in our closing couple of minutes, just give us a little more information on how people can get in touch with you or this book written by Multnomah Press.
First of all, there's a website, manalivebook.com, manalivebook.com. And if you go there, you can actually read the first chapter online. And there's also a very cool 75-second video trailer of the book with me driving my race car, which I think is kind of cool. Yeah. And so you can learn more about it there. It's available everywhere, you know, online. It's Kindle and all the different places. And then you can go to maninthemirror.org, maninthemirror.org/grow. Again, maninthemirror.org/grow. It's kind of like a trap door I put into our website to kind of give the overview, and you can find out more about the book there. And then also, we're in the process of hiring 330 full-time area directors around the country, one for every 1,000 churches. And each area director has the mission of building relationships with about 100 churches over the first 3 years to help them to be more effective discipling men. And so you can learn more about that at areadirectors.org, areadirectors.org. Or, again, you can go to maninthemirror.org/grow, and there's some more information on the main website as well.
AreaDirectors.org. I'm going to be searching that and learning more, and we'll let our listeners know that if you tune in again at the same time tomorrow, whether it's at 7:32 a.m. or the re-airing at 7:32 p.m., we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Patrick Morley, author of the best-selling book, The Man in the Mirror, and also this new book, one of his many books of, I think, 18, called Man Alive, Transforming Your Seven Primal Needs into Powerful Spiritual Life. Before I close, let me quickly highlight those seven primal needs that need transforming. Basically, we can feel we're in it all alone, that it doesn't feel like God cares personally about me, that there's no purpose in my life, it's kind of random. I have a tendency towards destructive behaviors, which drag me down. My soul feels dry. My most important relationships are not healthy, and I don't feel like I'm making a difference. Be sure to tune in tomorrow and find out more with author and speaker Dr. Patrick Morley. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. And again, tune in tomorrow at 7:32 a.m. or the 7:32 p.m. That's Central Time, 8:32 a.m. and p.m. for our great Indiana listeners. And if you were intrigued or encouraged or blessed by this broadcast, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org. Copy that link, paste it into an email, and send it to a friend, and join us again tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.